What is up, Daddy Gang? It is your founding father, Alex Cooper, with Call Her Daddy.
Julia Fox, welcome to Call Her Daddy.
Thank you for having me.
How was your weekend?
My weekend was pretty, well, it's like when I'm not traveling, I have just like more work to do at home. So it's like never, it's just like always constantly work, work, work.
So when you're in New York, you're kind of like almost on work mode and then you're trying to
travel. Yeah, and mommy mode, like full time.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
So incredible.
Thank you.
So you were just working. Mm-hmm. Although I think I did see on a little site that you were at Paul's baby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was like my sister's birthday.
Oh,
so shout out Richie. Oh. And we went to Emilio's and then we went to Paul's baby grand, which is funny. Like I haven't been there in like literally 10 years or something. Like I used to go all the time. It's like my neighborhood club. And it was funny. Like I walked in and like the DJ started playing like Kanye West.
Stop.
And like all these like really excited white boys were like rapping all the lyrics like really passionately. And it was like really an experience. It was cool.
Probably a different experience than the last time you were there. And then now you're there.
Definitely.
Everyone's like singing a song in your face.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, everybody calm down.
I know.
White boys,
know.
Relax.
Yeah, it was amazing. Though.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Some things work so well. It's basically magic. Like my favorite highlighters that I'm like, wow, how did you all of a sudden make me look glowing? And you know what else really works, Daddy Gang? Shopify. It is a global commerce platform that helps you sell. I've seen a big difference in my online merch sales. They are especially good at turning browsers into buyers. I can see someone that's been on the site but didn't check out, or someone that checked out and then is revisiting the site. Like if you want to grow your business, Daddy Gang, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/unwell, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/unwell.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
What is a normal day for you? Like, I want to know, like, you woke up today, like, what did you do? Like, what is your daily
routine?
I
immediately, like, just tend to my son. So it's like brush teeth, breakfast, bath, play. Then after a couple hours, I'll put him down for a nap. And that's when like my day begins. So then it's like, okay, then I'll shower and like brush my teeth and answer my emails and like just pretty much get to work.
Love it.
But other than that, it's like, like my son is always like my number one, like, and everything's always kind of just built around his schedule.
Amazing.
That's kind of when I can focus on myself.
Your birthday is on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Happy early birthday.
Thank you.
What are your birthday plans?
I think we're going to go to Lucien.
Oh,
yeah. Because I grew up with Zach, who's
yep.
Lucien's son. R.I.P. Lucien. Yeah, I had my son's birthday there. Just like easy.
Is it going to be a big party?
I think so.
Have you picked out your outfit?
No, we're not there yet.
You're not.
I don't
there.
Know. Maybe my stylists have been working on something, but I don't know. I haven't seen it yet.
Well, you've been like iconic recently in the fashion game. Who are you loving as a designer right now?
Besides Kanye.
Yeah, you can say Kanye. I respect it.
I mean, I love Daniel at Schiaparelli a lot. Glenn Martin's at Diesel and JPG, which I also love. I love Wang as well. Vivienne Westwood.
So you're not planning like your outfits like too far in advance? I mean,
no.
Julia, it's Monday. You have no birthday outfit?
Yeah, no. But everything's kind of like that with me.
Okay, so you're kind of just like a fly by the seat of your pants gal.
Yes.
You just
like
go
everything's
with it.
Last minute.
I love
and,
it.
And we're just kind of winging it and pulling it together. And like even that eyeliner moment, like that was like, we just decided like, let's like try it and see if it looked like, you know what I mean? It wasn't like planned out. Like everything's just.
How did you feel about that? That everyone was like, whoa, what the fuck is happening?
People hated it. I loved it. I just like wanted it more bigger, smudgier. Like, I don't know. I just feel like I'm so over like seeing the perfect contouring and the like perfect lashes. Like it's like. I want to be real. I want to be just be more like just real and I don't want to be perfect and I don't need everyone to like me. I'm not here for that, you know.
I feel like it was such a bold choice, and even though people were like shitting on it, everyone was talking about it.
And then I Chanel did their eye makeup that you know what I mean,
yep.
Similarly,
right.
In that way, and then I saw it in other places as well, and it's like that's fucking cool.
Everyone around you hyping you up, and then it was just the internet shitting on you? Like, everyone was like, oh, my God, it looks so good in person.
In person, everyone was gagging and loved it. And then on the internet, obviously, people hated it. But it's like, that's when you know you did something good, when everyone shits on it.
No, dude, I did one.
Because it's different.
Yes, I've done that semi before, but not as exaggerated. And I got so much shit on my picture.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, fuck off. I was trying something different. Like, let me live.
I know.
People are so fucking rude on the internet. Okay.
I didn't know how bad it was.
Until recently.
Yeah.
And now, do you read the comments?
Sometimes. Like very rare. Like, I don't Google anything. I don't read the headlines. Like, I never see anything.
Yeah.
But occasionally, obviously, I do see it. You know, it's impossible not to. But I just laugh. Like, it doesn't really affect me. I don't care.
Are there any ones that do affect you?
If someone says something about my kid, I'll block them.
Love.
Yeah.
That fucking
block. Other than that, like, not really. Yeah. I don't care.
I love New York. I used to live here. I moved to LA, so I miss it, and I'm so happy when I'm back. What neighborhood makes you feel most at home?
I would have to say the East Village, just because I probably spent the most years cumulatively there, and I went to high school there, and just like downtown in general. But I also have like a lot of like PTSD from the East Village as well. You know what I mean?
Why? Because like the most.
Yeah, like moments. Every block, I'm like, oh, like that happened there. Like, oh, you got in a fight here. Like, whatever. Like, it's everything's like a reminder of like high school. It's like the worst time ever.
My first apartment was in Lower East Side, and I feel the same way. I'll like see a street and be like, don't look.
Yeah.
That's the street I vomited on. Fuck. But it's also kind of like, okay, so East Village is your place.
Definitely.
I saw this TikTok. And I was like dying for it. So someone was like, okay, we're going to play Marry, Fuck, Kill, but with New York neighborhoods. And I can go first because I was like, okay, this is actually funny. I feel like I would kill Murray Hill. Sorry.
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Then I would fuck West Village maybe, and then marry Tribeca.
Okay. Yeah, that's okay. Pretty accurate.
Okay.
I would either marry Upper East Side or Tribeca.
Love.
Yeah.
Who would you kill?
I mean, Murray Hill was pretty spot on because lived here. Yeah. So you get it. Like, yeah, it's like, what is there? I know there's like a theater there, like a movie theater.
Like, what's going on?
And then that's it. Like, I'm not really sure. Yeah. Like, honestly, probably that or like. Yeah, that's probably Murray Hill
dies every time.
Because every other neighborhood has something redeemable.
Yes.
That's like, it's
something
Manhattan, it's New York, you know, like.
Totally. And then Murray Hill, you're like.
Like literally the movie theater. I don't know.
I agree. How do you think growing up in New York City affected how quickly you matured?
Well, I think it definitely affected how quickly I matured, because at a very young age, I was exposed to a lot of adult situations. Just leaving the house, you know what I mean? You just are gonna see it. So I think like the exposure, and then also not really being monitored properly, and then kind of just being curious and also kind of fearless and just wanting to see the world and wanting to go have experiences and go live my life.
Yeah, because your parents were divorced and you were.
No, they're actually still married.
Oh, your dad lived in New York?
But they've never lived in the same country. So it's like a weird, like, I don't know, my mom's Italian. She's like, doesn't really like America. Like, she likes Italy and like wants to stay there. And my dad, like, It just didn't really work out.
So you didn't have like, how would you describe, did you have any supervision growing up really in New York?
No.
Just a flat no. You're like, no, absolutely not.
No.
And so
he tried, like my dad, like there were times like when it would be like really getting out of control where he would try, like I remember one time, but that's the thing. It's like when you grow up with like just your dad, it's like such a different home environment. Like I remember one time he literally slept in the chair, like one of those recliner chairs in front of the front door so that I wouldn't leave. And I just climbed out my window. I lived on the second floor and we had a fire escape. So I just climbed out of the fire escape. And then at like 10 a.m., I like came knocking. No, it wasn't 10 a.m. because he was still sleeping in the chair as I'm knocking. It was probably like 7 a.m. or something. And I'm knocking. And he like woke up and he was actually more impressed and like laughing, like thought it was funny that I still found what, you know. He was like, you're like, how did you do it? How did you do it? And I was just like, I have my ways, like, don't ask, like, you know. And
so, like, grounding you would never work?
No. No. Like, the most maybe they would do is, like, take my phone away.
Got it.
But then it's like, I don't care, you right. know.
I'll just go out.
Yeah, then you won't be able to reach me even more. So, like, you know.
How old were you when you first went clubbing?
Like, proper clubbing, maybe, like, 14 so or something good.
How
like
did
that.
You get an ID?
Oh my God, we literally, my friend Alex, she like printed them like herself, like laminated. So, like it was so, like so they were good. So bad. Like that was actually my first fake ID. But then obviously we ended right. up figuring it out. But, and we would just use that. And like they were so clearly fake, but I think it's like you see like, slutty, like picture the girl, like the two girls in the movie 13, like you get like that vibe and it's like you're gonna let them in the
no
hot
bouncer
under,
gives
yeah.
a fuck
no like I had braces yeah. and they were letting me in girl
like go ahead sweetie you definitely look 27
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
what?
Yeah, yeah
fuck you
yeah
when did you first experiment with drugs
Probably in like middle school, like sixth or seventh grade.
Was it just because you found them through like friends?
I think the first drugs that I ever tried was weed, and it was actually my friend's mom who had it, and it was like very casual in their household to just smoke weed together and pass it around, and then that's kind of where I started smoking weed like a lot, like every day. That was like seventh grade.
Do you still smoke weed?
Yeah.
Love it. Did you ever get in trouble with like the law growing up?
Definitely.
Oh, tell us.
Yeah. Oh my God, so much. I was actually on probation for like 3 years and that really like saved my life in a way.
Wow.
Because for the first time it was like I'm grounded. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And I remember my first drug test on probation came back positive for marijuana, and it was like this big thing about like, am I gonna go to prison for a year? Like, what is my probation officer gonna do? And then she just like gave me some drug, really intense drug program that I needed to do, and that was it. But it was like, you know, a lot of situations like that where like it was like by miracle that like right. it didn't end up worse for me. But I really honestly credit like Ms. Cortez, my probation officer, because you know, like she really made sure that I, you know, and she even said, she was like, I know your type. She was like, I know you're manipulative and I know you're a liar. Yeah. And I was so sweet and cute and blah, blah, and she could see right through me. But yeah. And that was really like difficult. And I mean, it was like, oh fuck. Okay. I'm really going to have to do this
right.
now
because now
she can
see.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not someone
it's
I
like
can bullshit.
Law.
No.
When you say you were like manipulating and lying, like was it mostly to adults? Like
yeah,
how
any
you?
Authority figure,
right.
any authority, not to my friends or anything, just like any type of authoritative situation.
What were you on probation for?
That time, if that was like credit card stuff, and it was grand larceny and a bunch of other type, it was a bunch of really big things, and we were like indicted, and me and my best friend, who is actually one of my stylists now, and she was my co-defendant, and we like had to go to like, I think it was like the Supreme Court. I honestly can't even remember because I would literally show up like high on ecstasy from the night before, and sometimes miss court too and not show up at all. Like, it was like that was the type of shit I was on. Like, I really didn't care what happened to me. And I didn't care about my future.
When was the first time you got in trouble with the law?
Like, the first time probably, like, in middle school, like, running away from home.
Okay.
Getting picked up, like, stuff like that. Like, nothing really, like, serious. Like, maybe, like, we're at a party, they're kicking us out. Like, little things like that. The first time I was arrested, I think I was, like, stealing from, like, it might have been, like, Bloomingdale's. Like, I know I got arrested stealing at Bloomingdale's. But it might have been somewhere else. But I'm pretty sure it was Bloomingdale's this time.
So then when you were indicted, that was like kind of the catalyst.
Well, it was amazing, like, though, because then years later, I ended up doing a campaign for Bloomingdale's. And as I come in, they're like, come in, check in through the side entrance. And they wanted my ID. And I was like, oh, my God, they're going to search in the system that I'm banned here. Because like, the actual campaign was in the store. And it was so funny. But it was like really full circle, you know.
You're like, now I'm giving back.
Yeah.
I'm paying my dues. Yeah. Okay, fuck off. Wow. So you ended up getting in. You were fine.
Yeah, no, it was fine. Yeah.
So when did you start supporting yourself financially and why?
As a teenager, like pretty young. I remember like always wanting to work. Like I remember being like 16 and getting the right paperwork so that I could like work at a store or like I always wanted to work. But, you know, it wasn't enough money to like support myself, like independent. Like I wanted to be independent and then I was kind of forced into a situation that I can't really go too deep in, but I like was forced to be independent. And it was like, fuck, like, well, you know, I can't work at the pastry shop forever. You know what I mean? Like, that's not going to cut it. Like, I'm going to need more money. So I just went on Craigslist and I went on the adult section and everything was like sex, you know, that type of vibe, like be my slutty secretary, like that type of, and I was like, I don't know if I can do that. Like, you know, I was still like a kid. I wasn't comfortable like to have sex with a stranger. Like I wasn't even comfortable to have sex with someone that I knew. So I saw an ad and it was like no sex, no nudity, and can make up to $1,000-something a day or something, like whatever, huge number to me. I was like, wow, this is the most money I've ever heard in my life. So obviously I went and I met up with this like really like kind of insane looking white guy with this like long black trench coat, and he had me like write that like a sadistic like BDSM fantasy and just like off the top like write it, and I did, and he loved it, and he hired me on the spot, and then obviously I roped him, my like BFF, to come with me because I was like, I can't do this alone. And that was the end of that, and I was just naturally very good at it. Yeah, and then working there, I feel like it was really good for my self-esteem. I think I went in there, like, really not unsure of myself, like, not really confident in who I was. And I definitely left, like, knowing my worth.
When you say you were dominatrix, I think so many people are, like, actually don't even know what that means. Can you describe for someone that may not understand that, like, what is a dominatrix?
Yeah, so it's like, you know, similar to a stripper. There's an establishment and it's called a dungeon, and there's a few in Manhattan and in the other parts of New York as well, and it's legal. And the specific dungeon that I worked at was like, you would go downstairs into the basement and there'd be like all these different rooms, and there was a medical room, there was for like, you know, nurse type of doctor fantasy. There was like a torture room, like another type of chamber, like all these, like a cross-dressing room, a teaching room, like a school room, like just for any type of fantasy. Right. And then like it's really like role playing. It's like acting. It's role playing. And then that's kind of how I would describe it. Like when people were like, where did you get your start in acting? I said, well, it's really like at the dungeon, because I would have to improv like multiple times a day on very short notice. Like someone comes in, they look at all the books of all the girls. They might want to meet you in person. And then that's it. You have 5 minutes to get ready. And they just kind of tell you really quickly what they're into. And that's it. Then you figure it out and you have to wing it. So, you know, like doing that, that's like really good training if you do that all the time.
Yeah. You got to be like on your shit. Like you got to have some
confidence. You have to be
confidence.
On your shit. Yeah.
And to clarify for everyone, you're not having sex with these people.
No. Okay. No.
Because I feel like that's a misconception. People just think that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, it's not unheard of. Like there would be rumors of some girls that we would hear of. But that's like, I feel like in the dominatrix world, like, I mean, you know, you need to remain in control. And I feel like the moment that you have sex with your what they're called slaves in the BDSM community, like the moment you have sex with them, you're kind of putting them on your level in a way. Mm-hmm. And like, they need to know that they will never be worthy to have that. Like the pussy, they'll never be good enough for the pussy. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like they could kiss my feet. I could smother them, maybe sit on their face, like with my panties, but they'll never ever be good enough for my vagina. And like, that's very important, you know,
right? To keep the boundary.
Yeah.
So what types of fantasies did you like, were you like, okay, like you liked, and what were some that you were like, I don't fuck with that. Like, I don't like it as much.
I honestly liked all of them.
What was your favorite?
God, there were so many, but it was actually amazing because through doing this just for money,
yeah,
I ended up kind of learning about my own sexuality, which I'd never really had a chance to explore because my sexuality was always kind of being used against me, or like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or just I was, my sexuality was something to be guarded and protected, not something to be like explored.
Right.
So in this very controlled environment, I was also able to explore my own, because there'd be times in a session where I'd be like, oh damn, like this is actually like horny as fuck, like
right.
This is hot, you know. So it does happen, you
right.
know.
Which one do you think you're the best at?
I mean, just like body worshiping, like stuff.
What is that like?
Stuff like that. Just like kiss my boots, kiss my legs, like that type of stuff. Like tease and denial.
Oh. And you just like, you just talk dirty to them the whole time.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of verbal communication. It's very mental, this type of line of work, you know?
That is really interesting to think about, exploring your sexuality in such like a open way, in like where it's so accepted probably there, obviously, like everyone is like being very
and everyone's
vulnerable.
A freak, and we know it, so it's like I won't judge you, you won't judge me, and you know it's okay.
Like, can anyone go there? Like,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, anyone can just show up and go, and I honestly recommend that you do. It's really not that expensive. It's like I think like $250 an hour or something, and remember to tip.
Yeah.
Because they take most
tip
of bag, that.
25 or 30% bitches. Yes. Mm-hmm. What was your wardrobe like? Was it fire? Like, what were you putting on?
Oh, my God. That's why it's like now everyone sees me like wearing latex and like PVC and all that shit. But it's like, dude, I grew up in this shit. Like, I came out the womb in the fucking latex. Like, actually. The fits were insane. Like, patent leather boots, like thigh high, you know what I mean? And all, and most of them were gifts from clients.
Shit.
Like we would really finesse like the $400 latex, you know, like the fucking
so hot,
the really good shit.
What is your advice to anyone interested in working as a dominatrix?
I really feel like from the time that I spent there, which was a few years on and off, I would say like the most successful doms that I saw, they genuinely also were interested in what they were doing.
Got it.
Like for me, like I remember even being little and my dad used to like make me have play dates with like the kids in my class who were like maybe not as popular or something. Like he would just do that and it was fine, like I didn't care, but like I would like hang out with these like little boys and like boss them around and like make them like crawl around on their knees, and like I would like get on their back and like ride them, like, and I was like and as I was working in the dungeon and men would ask me to do things, I'd be like, oh my God, like this is totally like I'm sure the kids that I did that to, they probably like have
right.
these similar fantasies. Like some guy was like, he wanted to be dressed like a girl and like pretend that we were like brother and sister. And I was like, damn, I used to dress my brother up like a girl. Like, fuck, like you don't think he's now into the shit too or something.
Right.
You know, it's like you kind of like connect the dots and figure out,
No, that makes sense. It's like there's a niche space of like people that really succeed are the ones that actually like take it to heart, and you're like, I am enjoying this and I want to do this.
You need to believe it. Authentic. You really need to like believe in what you're doing, because otherwise it's going to like, you're just, it's a lot. It's a lot of on someone's mental health.
What are some of the risks of working as a dominatrix?
That you might never get out of it.
Did you feel that?
There were moments where I was like, oh my God, you know, I would see the older girls, but specifically like one older girl, like she had actually gone to the same high school as me. And we had the same advisor 10 years prior. Right. So, and I was like, damn, I wonder if I'm going to be here like, you know, in 10 years. But like, she's still fabulous and amazing. It's not a bad thing.
Oh, totally.
But like, you know, I obviously wanted more.
Yeah. Did you, were clients ever like creepy? Like, did it ever, were you ever like scared?
Mm-hmm.
Like that they would like, what, how is it scary?
I mean, sorry.
No, you're good.
There definitely were moments where I was like, oh my God, this person's really creepy and scary. And I would just like run out and just tell the manager. And like, then she, and then she'd fucking handle it. And she was like, oh, a scary, like 300-pound Ukrainian woman who like you don't want to
fuck with. Out.
Yeah, she was like gonna handle it. Yeah.
Did you get any ideas of how to perform from porn?
No, I actually never even watched fetish porn prior to this. Like, it was once I got into it that then I started Googling, and I was like, okay, so like let me see how they do it, you know?
Totally.
But I was really just kind of going off like instinct, like I could just figure it. You could just figure it out. It's not rocket science, you know? Like,
what kind of porn are you now into, and like what turns you on about it?
I'm into like weirdly like partner like swapping and then like watching or something.
So like foursomes.
It's, yeah, like more like that vibe right now.
Like cuckolding shit.
Then, bit. Yeah, like I could totally, like I've never done it. It's like so out.
Yeah.
Like in my other relationships, I feel like I don't know. I've always been so jealous and so possessive in all my relationships. And I really like, I don't want to be like that in the future, you know? So,
but it is hot. See. Like I feel it. Like when you see your partner, that jealousy in a way, if it's controlled, does turn you on.
Yeah. Especially if you know, like your partner really, like if you, if they know, if they love you and, and like they're doing it to turn you on, then that's hot.
It's so hot. Yeah. And it creates like this different type of energy. I've been the same. I've never done it with my partner, but I've always said like I feel like it would be hot to watch him with another girl.
Yeah.
But I'm like, fuck, if it actually happened, would I lose
like
my
what I
shit?
Know how would I feel in the moment. But I honestly think like in the moment we'd probably be able to handle it really well.
That's what I've always said on my show. Like, I think it's just establishing some type of boundary prior, because if you go into it blind and then like he's doing something, you're like, wait, don't do that, like what the fuck, why are you guys cuddling after you guys just fucking fucked, like what's going on? You eventually were invested in a nightclub.
Yeah.
How did being in kind of that nightlife elevate your experience in New York when you were younger?
Well, the nightclub came about because I was dating someone whose passion was to open a nightclub. Okay. So he asked me for money and I was like, okay, that's like what happened. Then he ended up attacking me. And after we broke up, because obviously I'm like, well, we're broken up, but I'm still going to come here because I still put money in this place. And you didn't even put any money in this place. So I'm still going to come with all my friends and drink for free. And I was doing that one night and he got really jealous and he attacked me and it became like a really, really big deal. And it was kind of before the like Me Too like movement, like, you know, and I was like, hey, like this happened to me and like in a room full of people, like people literally saw it happen. And there was still question about whether like if I instigated it, because I had this reputation of being kind of like a loose cannon, I guess.
Right.
But it's not, I'm not a loose cannon. Like I just speak up for myself and I speak up when I see something's fucked up or unfair. And so it was like really like the first time that I was like, wow. You know, because I would always hear stories of women that come forward and then like nobody believes them. Awful. And I was like, yeah, but that would never happen to me. Like everyone would believe me. And no, like it was very much like divided, like who was on whose side. And in that moment, like I was like felt so betrayed by like my own city. Like it was like a full like collective like betrayal. So I just left and it was like the best thing I could have ever done.
You want to speak up. And then when you're not believed, you question everything of like, what if this happened again? Now I probably wouldn't speak up next time. And that like breeds such an unhealthy culture.
Well, that actually happened. Something else happened involving like a very prominent person. And like, I didn't say anything because I was like, now it's just going to look like right. I'm this unhinged, like, well, I'll just keep it to myself. But I did suffer like emotional damage from that. Like I was like unwell for like a few months.
Do you ever think you would speak about it or no?
No, yeah. Because it's like, if that person was still out and able to hurt people, then yes, but he's not. So it's fine. You know, it's like, what is that? I don't need more like
totally.
Yeah.
Drama. How did also being immersed in the club scene affect your alcohol and drug intake?
I don't like not so much because my drug use was always very like alone or like with one or two other people. Got Do you it. Know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. it was always very like private and like more, I don't know. It wasn't like if when I was out partying, it was like still fun. It was like, you know what I mean? Like
I
it wasn't like,
cute.
Yeah, it was like cute. Cute. It was dark. It wasn't dark. Yeah. Right. Like my drug use was not fun, like in that way.
So you talked about, were you referencing when you were like, and then I just got out of there? Is that when you went to Louisiana?
Yeah.
So for people that don't know the story, you pack up, you leave New York City, you go to Louisiana.
And I had a fashion line too with my best friend. And I like fully was like, I can't even do this anymore. Like I signed it over to her name. And like pretty much just left, like packed up my shit and left and went to the South. And I was there with like a few of my friends and my friend Richie sent me a camera for Christmas. And then I ended up taking some photos and then an art show was born and then more shows and books and that like art journey kind of happened. And I definitely feel like more glad that I kind of segued more into art because I feel like I really had to express myself and I wasn't doing it in a really authentic way through fashion because I felt like I was kind of pretending to be someone I wasn't.
Totally. Did you feel going from such the juxtaposition of New York City to Louisiana and like being a city girl and then going to the South, were you lonely? Like, did you have any romantic relationships?
No, I wasn't lonely because I went there with my really good friend Harmony. And then I already knew two people down there, Jack and John, who were in this band Salem. That's okay. Really dope. And so I like knew people there. And Jack's actually the reason why I even ever went down there. Mm-hmm. And it was like I was such a city girl. Like I really only knew like L.A., New York, Miami, and then like Europe. And you know what I mean? Right. Like I was so ignorant and I had never been anywhere. I'd never really seen anything. So the first time going to Louisiana, I was like, oh my God, like real life, real people, like people that like go out at night, not to be like photographed, but like just to hang out with their friends. Like, wow. You know what I mean? Like, and I was really, really drawn to that. And in that process, I really like, I remember like I got rid of all my like nice clothes and like, I just really got rid of like all that stuff that I allowed to define me for so many years.
Wow.
You know, just always like, on the hunt for like money, you know, like always money, money, money. Like, cause I didn't grow up with money. So I was always like in financial insecurity, like, you know, and I kind of in that moment let go of all of that.
Part of the art you created in Louisiana was taking photos of people using heroin. What inspired you to take those photos?
You know, at the time it didn't really feel like a big deal because heroin had been such a major part of my life that I just kind of didn't like. Now when I see the photo, it like I am more affected by it. I'm like, ooh, you know, graphic, like I don't want to look at it, I look away. But at the time I was so numb to anything about drugs or guns or anything like that. It didn't seem like a big deal.
Were you using heroin at the time?
On and off, yeah.
When was the first time you tried heroin?
I think I was like in high school. Yeah, I was in high school because it was before I graduated.
How did that affect you?
I was actually, I remember it, this guy Mario. Sorry, Mario.
Shout out Mario.
Shout out Mario. I know he's definitely not. That was so long ago. Like, I'm sure he's not doing this anymore, I hope. But I met him at a party. And I didn't have a phone. And he gave me like two little wax baggies. And then I forgot how he ended up getting in touch with me, or like I got in touch with him, but it was very much like he knew that I would get in touch with him type of thing. Like he gave it to me because he knew that I'd be calling. And it was like pretty much like that. And at the time, none of my other friends were doing it. So I was like doing it in secret, and I would just like kind of put it on like a blunt that I was just going to like smoke to the face or something and like not share. I remember like they'd ask me and I would just be like, no, yeah, because they didn't know. And I was being such a bitch. And then I remember like I was like, okay, I'm like over it. Like I'm done now. And then I got sick and I was like, damn, like I have a cold. Like I didn't even know like the withdrawals and the things. Like I didn't understand that I was really playing with fire. So it's like a miracle that I haven't done that in very, very long. And I highly don't recommend it, especially now with the fentanyl and everything in it. It's like my best friend died at the end of 2019 from a fentanyl overdose. And that was like I had been sober prior, but then like that was like really the like the solid, like if I even have a thought, it's like very quickly wiped out. Yeah. Like I just think of her and it's like over. Ugh. Like I just know in my heart like I'm just never gonna do that again.
I'm so sorry. What was rock bottom moment for you that then?
There's so many rock bottom. It's like you'd think one was the rock bottom, but then it's like it gets worse. I would probably have to say like overdosing was probably a rock bottom.
Who found you when you overdosed?
Well, there's been a few. Okay. But the last one, like the like really bad one, it was like on my birthday, and it was really sad because like my sister was there and like she was sober and like the whole party was ruined because I literally like fell over in front of the whole party. Yeah, it was really bad, and that was like a very awakening moment. Yeah, and I really credit her for saving my life, because she at 19 years old had the foresight to be like, you know what, I'm gonna go get sober and like join AA and like really do it, and like she's still sober to this day. So and if it wasn't from her being sober and then like showing me like like she would drag me to meetings and I would just be like on my phone, like not, you know, like not paying attention, and then one day it took. So
wow. Mm-hmm. That's amazing to have people in your life that are like there for you. Yeah. And it's like, we're gonna keep trying until sticks.
That's why like she's with me today on this journey, and like that's bam forever, you know.
Oh my god, how much are you younger, older?
We're actually like a couple months apart. Okay. Yeah. Oh, she's not like my biological sister.
Oh, you're
sister.
Just saying like your sister's just yeah,
yeah,
friend.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah,
like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
You're an only child.
She's
okay,
my friend, but
it.
She's
got
my
it.
Sister.
Basically like blood. Yeah, got yeah. it. When and how did you meet the father of your child, and how did your relationship evolve?
I met him at the Carlisle. Ooh. Through Zach Bahaj, who owned Lucienne.
Yeah.
And but I think we had actually met when we were teenagers. I'm older than him, though. He was like 14 and I was maybe like 17. And I remember thinking like, oh, he's hot, but he's really young.
Yeah.
Like I literally remember that happening. And then we met again, and it was like love at first sight. He had a girlfriend. I like tried to hit on him and he said, no, I have a girlfriend. And I liked that he turned me down, and I liked that he was loyal. But then they broke up a few months later. He called me, obviously the rest is history. He actually came to the rap party of Uncut Gems. So the movie wasn't even out yet. Comes to the rap party, and we were literally together every day after that. And then we got married like a month later in Vegas. Yeah, with like the Elvis Presley impersonator and all of that. And it was really, really fun until it wasn't.
Right. Like it was incredible, and then it wasn't.
Yeah, and then it was a nightmare.
How did your relationship change once you had your son?
It had changed prior to that. Yeah, there were issues prior. I think suddenly, like, all the attention from Uncut Gems happened, and then suddenly guys are in my DMs, and I'm traveling a lot, and now I'm busier than I used to be, and not as available, and also, like, just not as patient. Like, I'm tired now. I don't want to, you know, like, just be, like, easy to be around. You know what I mean? Totally. Like, please. And it just wasn't really working out that way. But he really, like, he, obviously he's not perfect. I'm not perfect. Like, obviously we were drawn to each other for a reason.
Totally.
But he's actually, like, one of the most, like, genuine people I know. Like,
wow.
Like, really, like, what you see is what you get. Like, not, like, he's, I can't really describe it, but it's definitely, it's something that a quality that Kanye has as well, just being so genuine, like almost childlike in a way, just like so honest, so blunt, like, and I'm really drawn to that. Like, I like people that are just no transparent.
Yep.
Yeah.
Within the last few days of 2021, you posted an Instagram story. You're like, I already know what you're gonna say. That read, have you seen
this? This is a dead
You're like,
dad.
Fuck you, don't read it. Do you care if I read it? Just anyone that didn't hear
it's
it.
It's fine. Yeah. I definitely called him a deadbeat dad. Well, because he had blocked my number for like a month at that point, and I was just like fuming. And I didn't know that he had been paying my rent.
How did you not know that?
Girl, I just wasn't paying it. I was like, I'll let it pile up and then I'll just write. Cause it's like, why can't they, like, just do it electronically? It's so much easier. It's like, why do I mail a check?
Yes.
They want me to mail a check.
Why the
girl.
Fuck do they still do that?
I haven't seen my checkbook since 2008.
I don't even have one. Okay? I don't even know where it is.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's why they're not getting
I
their
feel
fucking
you on
rent.
That.
Anyway, so I was just like, but also the landlord's my friend.
Okay.
So it's fine.
So, like, I'm just not getting evicted. Yeah, yeah. Not sure why, but, like, living for
yeah,
this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, on my list of priorities, it was like number six. Like, I have so many other, like, things that are, like, so much more dire to think about. So I was just like, it's fine. So I didn't even know that. So in my head, I was like, oh, he's, like, not helping physically, but he's also not even helping financially. Oh. And that's what set me off. Because if he wasn't helping physically, but then he was sending money, I would have at least been like, oh, okay, he does want to be in his son's life, but he just needs to take a break.
Right.
And I'm angry about it, but I understand because the breakup was really hard. And we obviously had still a lot of feelings for each other. So I understand him needing that. But obviously, I wish I knew that information because I definitely don't think I would have reacted in that way.
And then did he tell you?
No. Thought my landlord did, yeah.
And you're like,
no, he actually didn't even text me or call me or, like, say take it down or anything. Oh, I know.
You then
he's
said
a very like noble man. He was like, I'm just not even gonna engage, which kind of made me even more mad.
Right. You're like,
I know, because honestly, if he had just texted and been like, take it down, I would have been like, okay,
okay, sorry. Yeah. Out, sorry. Yeah. Okay, wow. So the fallout, you did say you like regretted it.
I do regret it. I mean, listen, I didn't lie.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
But obviously I did take things out of context to intentionally make someone look bad. Yes.
Totally.
I did.
Totally.
You know, if we want to paint the full picture, it's like, no, he actually is really great and has these other amazing qualities. And like, but it's like, oh, you know,
yeah.
Fuck. I just shouldn't have said anything to begin with.
Are you on good terms now?
Yes. Very, okay. Very. And he's been super supportive, and I've been having to travel a lot. So he's been helping, which is great because they get to like make up a lot of time that they haven't spent together in the last 2 months. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So it's actually worked out perfectly.
You added actress to your resume 3 years ago when you starred in Uncut Gems with Adam Sandler, and you played a role that was based on yourself. The name was even Julia.
Mm-hmm.
Were the filmmakers your friends? Like, why did they build this character for you?
Yeah, the filmmakers were friends of mine, and they'd been working on this project for many years, like I think like 10 years or something before it came out. So for like 10 years or something, they'd been telling me like, this movie, this character, like, and they ask me for like, what would you do if you were in a fight with your boyfriend? Like, how would you get him to like, you know what I mean? Like just asking me that type of shit. And then I was like, all right, like, I see what's happening here. Like, I'll you know, and then I obviously like got on the phone and we developed her. And her name was actually originally Sadie, but Adam Sandler's daughter's name Sadie. So they, and they were trying to find a name, but like nothing else fit. It was like, it was Julia. Just supposed to be Julia. Yeah.
What aspect of your personality do you think was best portrayed in the character?
I think the like humor and the like just like no fucks given type of attitude. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Are the rumors true? Will you be playing Madonna in her biopic?
No, I wish.
I'm like, Julia, can you sing?
I wish. No, I can. I can definitely like get down with some karaoke and like I have some range, but I definitely not Madonna's range. No, I actually auditioned to play Debbie Mazar, her BFF, who I'm obsessed with. And people have been comparing me to her my entire life. Yeah, so, I mean, but, you know, she's going to audition a million girls. Yeah. Like, you know, high chance I probably won't even get it. Like, it's just the industry's like that. It's
totally,
you know, it's nothing personal.
Whoever.
Yeah, but I gave it my best shot. So
I we'll love see. It.
Yeah.
Okay. Rumor has it you're dating someone new. Have you guys put a label on it?
I mean, I call him my boyfriend and he calls me his girlfriend.
Cute.
Yeah.
But there was never ever like an official conversation.
No.
Don't you love when that just happens all of a sudden one day? You're like, I think you're my boyfriend.
Yeah. Yeah. It just happened. And it felt very just very organic and like not even like crazy or anything. Just very natural.
Do you remember the first thing he said to you?
Ever in life?
Yeah.
Up, it's Yay. I think it was like something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He like got my number through a mutual friend.
What was your first impression of him?
Super magnetic, like very attractive. Like not a I don't even mean it like he's attractive physically, but I mean also just like the vibe is very like attractive.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you I, at least for me, like I felt like I wanted to gravitate toward, you know what I mean? Like it was very like when that happens, like
oh sparks. My God. You're like, that person has something.
An aura.
Yeah.
They just glow. They radiate an energy. And he definitely has a very, very special, unique, like one of a kind energy.
After your first meeting in Miami, you have this like whirlwind 24-hour like moment. And then like, how did you guys leave it before you went to New York?
Oh my gosh, I was only supposed to go there for the night and then I was supposed to fly back the next day. We ended up staying like 3 or 4 extra days. And it was like we were on the Kanye workout plan. Like we got to work. We were like, okay, you know, we're going to do this. Like if I'm going to be seen with you, like I need to, you know, step it up a little bit just because I'm late. Like I'm a little lazy. That's just a thing. It's a fact, you know? Okay. Yeah. Right. So I definitely do need to be like nudged a little bit and like pushed out of my comfort zone. And I love that because I don't think anyone has been able to succeed in that because I'm stubborn and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to wear the things that I'm comfortable in. And it's like, you know, and I have my insecurities that no one else sees. And like, you know what I mean? When he doesn't see them. So he just like, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's cool to see myself through his eyes.
For anyone who lives under a rock or didn't read Interview Magazine, you detailed this like lavish second date in New York City. Can you indulge us and just kind of like walk us through the night?
Yeah. We went to see Slave Play, Jeremy O'Harris's play. Oh. That was amazing. Then we went to Carbone. And then after Carbone, we went back to the Pendry where his suite was. And I just thought we were going to go and like just hang out, like play Uno or something. He really likes Uno. I just thought we were going to do that. And I walk in and like all the furniture in the hotel room has been like pushed into the bedroom and like there's all these racks like lining all the walls and it was like a fucking dream. And it's also just like the thought behind it, and like he had also just landed at like earlier in the evening, so it was like, how did he even, you know what I mean? But
he
makes it happen. That's and then he did something for me in LA as well. He like turned this big warehouse space into like a really cool like restaurant kind of vibe. Oh. Yeah, for me and my friends. And like that was really nice. And Naomi Campbell was there. And
that
so like just really iconic moments that he does for me.
Have you ever felt in these moments like a little overwhelmed?
No.
Why do you think?
I don't know. I'm just like grown. And like, also I grew up in New York City. I grew up around celebrities. You know what I mean? I know how to like, and also I really feel like I've like earned my place to be there. Do you know what I mean? Like, obviously I'm not on their level and I'm not saying I am, but I feel like I've like put in the work and like I can hang.
Yes.
I can hang. Totally. Definitely. Everyone's like, oh, look at her now. Like, she's at dinner with Madonna. It's like, well, actually I set up that dinner and I invited Kanye. You know what
Stop.
I mean?
Oh my God. That's kind of baller.
Yeah. So it's like, obviously people, it looks a certain way, totally. But people don't know the conversations happening behind the scenes. And like, no, I've been around. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, on your podcast, you talk about how people were kind of like calling it love bombing almost, of how extravagant things have gotten. Why do you not consider it love bombing?
Because he doesn't have like a shady ulterior motive.
Right.
Which I think is like super crucial in the love bombing element, because, you know, in a typical narcissistic like relationship in that way, it's like you get love bombed and then you get isolated and then you get like, you know what I mean? And it's like, no, actually like my friends are now with me 24/7 because they're hired. And it's like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's not trying to like have me to keep me firm, like lock me away. No, he wants me to be the best version of myself. Like, that is always the conversation. Oh. Always. Like, how am I going to live up to my full potential? Which I think is like amazing.
So would you, because everyone's like, would you consider yourself Ye's muse?
Yeah, a little, maybe.
What does it even mean? To no one that's ever been, because I remember you were like, this is not the first time that what is a muse?
I mean, I was Josh Safdie's muse when he wrote Uncut Gems.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, things like that. Like, I think people make it seem a little more dramatic than it is. Like, totally. I'm not, you know what I mean? It's not like Van Gogh, like, type of, like.
Yes.
He wants to dress me right now. Yes. Like, yes. I think that's kind of what it is.
Is there anything that you know, like, you're inspiring him with? Like, you say, like, he's...
Yeah,
you know
I think I mean? it's very mutual. Like, I'm definitely an ideas person. I always have, like, crazy, like, out there ideas. And so does he. And I love telling him my ideas. And like, we know we get excited over each other's, like, weird thing. You know, it's definitely mutual, for sure.
What do you guys disagree on?
That one of the makeup looks, he actually went and tried to draw like a sunglass line. And I think that was like the only time where I literally was like, no, like, this is where I put my foot down.
Oh my God. I would be like, absolutely fucking not. Yeah.
No, but then I actually online, I like randomly saw an image of that makeup and it didn't look that bad actually. Like a full sunglass. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? I need to like, when he's doing something, just let him execute the vision, because it might actually be cool. Because a lot of times I've been like, oh my God, what is he doing? What is he doing? And then it's fucking awesome.
And you're like, fuck, I would have never thought of this.
And that like never happens for me. So it's really cool to meet someone that like does something that I really would have never thought of doing. Totally. You know?
What do you say to people who claim this is not a real relationship?
I mean, time will tell. You'll see for yourself. Yeah. You'll just see. Yeah.
The tabloids and social media are always comparing women.
I know.
And you keep getting compared to his ex. Why do you think they're doing that?
Well, we've worn some of like the similar looks.
Right.
Which I knew at the time of wearing them. I knew that Kim had worn it previously. But I thought it was cool that she had worn it.
Right. And she's iconic.
Yeah. Like, it wasn't even a thing. But it is unfortunate because... you know, women are always just being pitted against each other. And obviously, like, you know, there's 10 years of history that they have prior. And like, I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to ever like step out of line and like speak on something that like I have no place speaking on.
Like when someone was like, oh, they're both wearing Balenciaga. I'm like, wait, we can't all wear that now?
Well, if anything, I feel like the conversation should be like, wow, it's amazing to see how heavily influenced Kim was by Kanye.
Yeah. That's,
you know, a what great I mean? Point. If anything, yep. I feel like that's kind of what that shows. But obviously people want to run with the more like nastier like narrative, and
it's so immature.
And make people feel bad. And it's like, actually, I had a fashion line, and the the Kardashians actually sold it at their store Dash and wore it on magazines and in the show. So it's like there's ties. I have my history of fashion as well. I didn't just like pop out of nowhere. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, celebrities wore all my – Nicki Minaj wore my clothes. Like everyone, you know? So like, yeah.
How do you describe the style that you're showcasing to the world right now?
It's – I'm giving like dominatrix, like couture. Yes. Which I love.
Love.
Which I love. And it feels like, you know, familiar and like safe. Like I've been there before. Like I've been there. So
they look like they've been wearing the same outfits for like 4 months or whatever. And they keep saying, you guys, like, what do you say to that?
I mean, I think about rewearing the same. Like I'd rather wear the same outfit a bunch of times than like wear the wrong outfit once. So.
Yes. Also, everyone look inward. How many times do you rewear an outfit?
Yeah.
Like just because you're getting papped, it's not like you're
we're still real people.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. You're like, these are my favorite pants.
I actually just sent out my laundry today for the first time in like a month. So
oh my God.
Congratulations to me.
Do you think Kanye's boots are sexy?
I love the boots.
Have you ever tried them on?
No, I haven't.
They're so iconic.
I know. I should try them on, actually. No, they are. I love it. They look like an action figure or like a video game character or something, which I love that vibe. So.
I know you mentioned like getting jealous and with how much the media is like, he wants her back. Like he was fighting for her. Like have you had jealousy moments where you're like, oh, this is icky?
No, not really. I mean, I'm sure there's still some sort of residual feelings and it's like, it's normal. It's human, you know, but I also like know that he's with me now. So yeah. And that's all that matters.
Have you guys talked about your future together?
Like, yes. There's a lot of like us and we conversations, which is really nice. But no, like I said, everything is very on a whim, last minute, like pack up, we're going here, now we're going, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm like, can't even get past like next week, let alone like.
Just having fun.
Yeah.
Totally. Has he given you any career advice?
Definitely. Yeah.
Like
it's like all he does.
Right. Like, do you feel like you're now in a great way, kind of like taking a different trajectory, or you're just like amplifying what you wanted to do?
I'm going to amplify what I already wanted to do. I definitely still want to act and I definitely still want to produce and write and direct and do my own projects. And like, that's really where I see myself falling eventually. But right now, I just really want to act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With all the media attention around you, what is something you've had to change this year about your life?
Nothing really.
Yeah. Amazing.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Does it give you anxiety when you're photographed?
No.
No.
Uh-uh.
You're just like, fuck yeah.
No, I take the subway still. Like,
what's a misconception about you?
That I'm a gold digger. Yeah. Because it's like, yes, I have dated rich men, but like they pursued me first. Okay. And secondly, I've also like dated and like been fully madly in love with straight bums where fully they were living off of me. Like, you know what I mean? And I was the sugar mama type of situation. So, you know, it's really about the person, you know. It's not, at the end of the day, like no amount of money is going to make me like actually have feelings for someone or actually want to spend time with someone. If I'm spending time with you, it's because I like genuinely really like you.
Totally. You're one of the first people I feel like recently that's like actually getting some like positive media attention from like random comments being like, good for her, like let her live her life, which is exciting, I feel like, in media to see like a little positive turn. Someone's always fucking shitting on every woman when they start dating a man.
Yeah.
And it's like so negative.
I think it's refreshing because it's like, it's, I feel like, such an interesting choice for him.
Yeah.
And an unexpected choice.
Why?
I don't know. Like, I feel like I would have never expected him to
like you.
Yeah. Although I had actually been asked to do some Yeezy campaigns and shows like a couple of times throughout the years.
Yeah.
And it just never really worked out. Like I wanted to do it, but it was like scheduling conflicts and I wasn't in town. So like there, you know, and there would have been other opportunities for us to have met, but I really feel like, you know, timing is everything, and it just had to have been now, because if he had met me prior, I would have been with my husband, and I'm like super loyal. So there would have been not even, I wouldn't have even looked in his direction, honestly.
What is next for you? Like, have your goals shifted? Like, what do you want people to think of Julia Fox in like 5 years, 10 years?
I really want my work to speak for itself. You'll definitely still be seeing me in my fashion looks. I'm definitely committed to that. But I definitely a lot of movies, a lot of writing. I'm working on a book project right now. I'm developing a series, and I'm writing a movie, which I already like kind of technically sold. I'm still, whatever, it's complicated.
Yeah.
But so it's kind of, it's like I'm still doing my things that I already had planned, pre-planned, pre-Kanye.
Yeah.
Pre-A.
And I just thank you for sitting down with me, because it's so nice to hear you like in long form speak. Like, people see things on social media and pictures, but when you get to sit down with someone, like, you're so warm and nice and genuine and as your life is right now. And I think people will hear that in this episode.
And that's like really what I want to convey, is like, I'm just like a normal girl, and like, I don't, I'm just a regular fucking regular bitch.
Right. Love it.
Regular bitch.
Julia Fox.
Thank you. Plug. I did. Yes. Plug. And if you guys want to hear more like weekly tea and stuff, like, you can. And we interview a lot of really amazing guests as well on our podcast. Also on Spotify, called Forbidden Fruits. So check it out if you guys want to hear me again.
Love you, bitch. Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by DoorDash. Want $0 delivery fees? Try Dash Pass by DoorDash. Daddy gang, I love being home. I love to be cozy, comfortable, laying on the couch. I can't tell you how many times I need something, but I am too lazy to get up and get out of the house. And sometimes I need food or groceries, you name it. Dash Pass gets it delivered right to my door and yours too. It is only $9.99 a month, so I think it's a really good deal, Daddy Gang. So get $0 delivery fees on eligible orders with Dash Pass, and new members get a 30-day free trial. Terms apply. Sign up today.